This is Scott Richmond.
And Arnie Sherman.
You're listening to What Do You Know on News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. Arnie Sherman, a good Sunday morning to you.
Summer's just whipping through, right? We're already in August. It's amazing how it's going quickly. And we have a great guest today, Mayor Andrea Davis, who was last with us. Time flies, it really does, in May of 2024. So it's been a year and 3 months or so since we've had the mayor here. We only had her a few months after she was elected, and now we have a chance to hear about what's going on with the city of Missoula, the city we love.
Yep. You got to give it to somebody like Andrea, who really has put her life to the side to become to be the mayor of our town, and the requirement it takes.
Well, she was a CEO, president of an NGO, you know, Homeward for 15 years.
I mean, right.
She was committed to that.
Right.
And then, the late, great John Engen passed away, and there was an opening, and she stepped forward, and, you know, she got a tremendous response from the community, and she's been the mayor. Missoula continues to be on every top 10, 20 list of best-run cities in America, best small towns to come to or
yep.
visit. It's, it's where the blue dot, as she calls it, the blue dot in Montana. And that means a lot to the folks who live here.
I love it. And I love speaking to her too, Arnie, because I think she brings an energy and an enthusiasm to the job. And that'll definitely come through in our interview. She loves Missoula, but she loves what she does. And I don't think it's easy work.
No, it's not easy work. And it's hard to, rise to the top, and she has risen. I mean, USA Today this year named her one of the top 50 women in the country.
Wow.
Which is pretty impressive. And that's not just political people. That includes entertainment people and a whole
Are
other.
You, that's amazing.
Yeah. So, USA Today's Women of the Year, 50 women for her work advancing affordable housing and leading the Our Missoula Community Plan process, which we're going to talk about.
Can't wait. When we come back, our guest will be Mayor Andrea Davis. Back after these words. We're laughing here. Our guest is Mayor Andrea Davis. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Hey, it's great to see you again, Mayor.
It's wonderful to be here with you.
You've had a interesting time, as I view from an outsider, as mayor. You've been the mayor now for a year and a half.
Mm-hmm. 18 months,
18
in fact.
Months. Wow, mm-hmm. Time flies. You mm-hmm. were on this show in May of 2024.
Yeah.
Which is a year and 3 months ago. And you laid out a vision for the city back then. Mm-hmm. And so we've asked you to come back to talk a little bit about how things have been going, how your strategic priorities have percolated to the top, what are they, and how are they going, and a whole host of other questions about how you've tackled this job and how you're feeling about the city of Missoula right now.
Well, excellent, Arnie. Thank you for the opportunity to be back here with
Good.
You and Scott. It's always a wonderful conversation. Thank you. I have prioritized three main things after setting out my vision for helping ensure that Missoula continues to be a place that people can live and thrive. You know, folks can work here, go to school here, retire here. And we know that we're living in a place that a lot of people are doing really well. In fact, Missoula is off the charts in so many ways. And so many people are still having a hard time making it work. Mm-hmm. More and more, in fact, with the rising cost of living. We did a survey in the fall of 2024. Interesting time to do a community survey when there were, of course, national polarizing elections
right.
going on. But I will say that we got important information by which we need to dig in further. It really helped inform my priorities for this year and into the future. And those are better public more responsive government for better public service.
Mm-hmm.
Second, it is addressing the cost of living and increasing further enhancing strengthening our economy. And the third is addressing housing choice and affordability. And we've done actually several things under each of these to make progress.
Good. Well, let's start with the first one. Let's talk about responsive local government.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Yeah, right. Great question. Some of the questions that we ask folks, we realize that folks are not seeing the value in government for the taxes they pay. We can get into that that would be a whole podcast in and of itself.
Right.
However, the thing that we can say about that is that the city did rate about 2 times better than the state and federal government. So that's we've got that going for us. But still only 56% of Missoulians thought that we were doing a good job at representing mm-hmm. all of their needs. And so there was 3 things that really came out of the survey, and these aren't going to be shockers, but it also underpins all of this. People love living in Missoula. It's expensive to live here. And we have a very engaged community that wants more from its government, and rightly so. So how we are creating a more responsive government for better public service is that we are doing things like figuring out how we can modernize our communications to meet people in the various ways that they're getting information. So that's a challenge every single local government is facing. But we are doing things like addressing our website to make sure that there are customer service portals and people can navigate it much more easily, likely with the use of technology.
Right.
To just get information easier because we know people rely on our website. We are doing some things where we're making sure that Ivins instituted a constituent response protocol across our departments. Not to say that we weren't doing a good job at customer service. We are, but we can do better. We need to hear what people are saying, and we need to do something with that. The other things, much to the support and decisions by local voters, when we had the fire levy pass, we were able to increase our public safety for the community by hiring not only 20 firefighters, which is what the levy afforded us. We actually also received a federal SAFER grant, and that afforded us the ability to hire 6 additional firefighters. So we have brought on 26 new firefighters. We have made sure that our existing firefighting team is compensated where they should. They have you know, difficult jobs, as do our police force. And we are building a new station. We've hired a new fire chief. Our previous fire chief did mm-hmm. retire, and we hired a new fire chief that mm-hmm. will be able to lead this forward-looking department into the future. And what's surprising, and one of the things of being a responsive government, is using the tools to make good decisions. And one of that is, what kind of data are we using?
Mm-hmm.
Good data in, good data to make decisions. One of those was a fire location study. During this levy campaign, I think a number of us thought, we're going to build a station where we see the development happening, which is out towards the airport.
Right.
However, the data didn't prove that. The number of calls and the frequency, the call service lag time from all of our different stations proved that we need that station closer in to the core of the community. And by doing so, we can actually recalibrate the other stations to have shorter call time to be able to get to those emergency calls on a more frequent basis, thereby, just improving public safety. So those that kinds of decisions, you know.
So where is it moving? So where is it going to be?
On 3rd.
On 3rd Street. Wow. Yeah.
It should be. That's where it identified. We're still in we're now carrying forward with the process.
3rd and what? Like
Between Russell and Reserve is nice. Where it identified the ideal location.
That makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. So those are just a couple of examples.
Good. Well, you have a city manager, Dale Bickle. He's been here for 10 years.
He's actually not a city manager. Okay. And the reason he's a chief administrative officer.
Okay.
But the reason I say that is because how people refer to local municipal government is a city manager form of government, and that is not what we are.
Right.
We are what's called a strong mayor form of government, which means that I am the chief executive officer.
Right.
And I have the fortunate ability to have a chief administrative officer that can more or less serve as a chief of staff.
Good. That's a good clarification. You also have, what, 800 employees?
Actually, 900 right around now. It's summertime.
So we're up to 900 employees.
Mm-hmm. With temporary, seasonal work. Yep.
And you, beside all of the interface with social media, you have to have a 900-person workforce that is carrying your message and carrying a vision of, responsibility and responsiveness to the public. So are you doing anything in that area to make that happen?
Yeah, thanks for asking. We've been holding quarterly staff halls, how you might think mm-hmm. about like a town hall.
Right. Yeah.
So we hold it in city council chambers just for our staff. And then we also create a virtual opportunity because obviously 900 people, first of all, probably aren't showing up to listen to me. Quite frankly, we have shift workers. I'll give everybody else the benefit of the doubt. And then secondly, though, obviously not everybody's going to fit in that room. But we had, gosh, I just held one week before last, or last Tuesday, actually. Right. And it was, I don't know, 150, 170 people showed. It's recorded. People can watch it later at their convenience. And it's an opportunity for me to talk about, you know, as you mentioned, I set out my vision. These are the priorities. And then this is the progress we're making together. And then it's an opportunity for folks to ask questions. And because we have such a large workforce, how do I make sure that I'm connecting with people? I also have, over the course of the last 18 months, it's taken a while, but I've gotten to the various facilities that the city owns. We're talking everything from cemetery to public works to wastewater, compost, you bet, all of it. And I still have more work to do because there's just meeting our staff in the field is one of the most gratifying opportunities.
You're it's very really visible. Awesome. But, you know, to put a point on social media, because one of the things that I find amazing is social media, if employed correctly, you could really have a regular ongoing dialogue with the community in a way that not just people that live in the community, but people that came from the community that moved elsewhere, that they feel connected to Missoula. And I'm wondering, is there a plan in place to do that?
Oh, I love you're asking this. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, please.
But I'm excited about this. There is a plan in place. We have made progress and we have a ways to go. We know that we needed greater capacity when it comes to social media because you're familiar with it. So you know that it's not just somebody getting on to Facebook or Instagram occasionally and making a post. There is skill.
Right, right.
There's a capability around really connecting with people in meaningful ways. So we were able to, you know, the city is has really been impacted like everybody else has with the cost of living and inflation.
Sure.
So one of the things that I've been extraordinarily mindful of and another priority is cost of living lens. And so I was able to secure a small amount of funding for social media support from an outside vendor, basically a person in our community that just contracted with us. And that really helped us get started. And it took the pressure off of our other folks that are doing communication across many, many, many departments because they don't necessarily have time for what social media requires when,
right,
to be good at it. That gave us a good start. And in reality, fiscal year 26 budget doesn't include more than that. But we are looking to how we can reshape our communication strategy at the city. We have undergone the work with somebody that came to us and offered some free consultation. It's called the Local Policy Lab.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a way that we could basically examine our existing communication strategies, effectiveness. And it was great.
It's always great when that happens. Somebody volunteers to help out and do something.
An outside perspective.
Yes, right. Exactly.
Professionals.
Absolutely.
They came in and they hired, they interviewed folks from city council, mayor's office, city leadership, and then staff that are doing this work out in communication and public information officers and such. And there was some themes that came out of that. And, you know, one of which is to increase our tools when it comes to virtual and social engagement. And so we know that we have an opportunity here to both refine what is communication, which is a one-way flow of information, mm-hmm, and then engagement, which
right,
is what social media can offer you.
Exactly.
Like you said, done right. But then what do you do with that information? And how do you at least know, at least let people know that you heard them and you did something with that?
Right.
You might not take their advice because you might not be able to. But you might have said,
right,
we heard what you said, and here's the direction we're going.
The mailbag, right. Hey, our mailbag. Let's dip in and see what people are asking. But I have to say one thing, because you have such a great energy about you, and
you
know how to present what's going on in our community. I almost want to see more of you, because I feel like the one thing that I see very valuable in like my old hometown in New Jersey is the mayor there is just always on like a TikTok or an Instagram,
right,
or a reel,
yeah,
even if it's twice a week, just giving something, I feel connected to my old community.
Yeah, right on.
And so I like that.
So
yeah.
AI mayor.
We need to see. I don't want any AI.
I know.
You but want the real thing.
I want the real thing because I haven't seen you in a while, but I'm like, God, I said to Arnie before, and I was like, she's such an infectious energy. Like that's, I like that. Like that's what I want to know about what's going on in our community.
Yeah, right on.
Is that you're there. You're personifying the energy that's happening in our community.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that so much. And, you know, that example of what you're suggesting is that's obtainable. We can do that.
I agree.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me get back to the strategic priority two, the addressing cost of living. There's no place in the United States. I don't think there's any place in the world that says we've lowered our cost of living.
Yeah.
It always is on a trajectory right. that's going forward. But you want to have the population have the ability to access that life that they're looking for in a more attainable and reasonable way. What can a mayor and what can a city do to make that happen?
Yeah, thank you for asking, because there are so many factors that are international, global, and national that impact
sure.
the cost of living here. And of course, as we know, I mean, we're an attractive place to be. And so people with means have the ability to move to Missoula and possibly, you know, and it's not just people moving here. I mean, it's just the reality of the cost of life, right?
Right. I mean, you don't control car prices or
correct.
What a refrigerator costs.
Right.
Moving services or
right.
any of those sorts of things.
Yeah, exactly. There's a few things that we've done at the city in the last 18 months. One is that I've instilled a cost of living lens. And that sounds like, wait a minute, the city wasn't doing that before. It's not that our staff and departments and leaders weren't cost conscious, but I have put an extra emphasis on thinking about and looking through the lens of how would this decision impact the cost of living for right. our residents? And can we control something here? So, for example, as we were going through the budgeting cycle for the fiscal year 26, first of all, I inherited an unbalanced situation. We mm-hmm. have a structural deficit, as most local governments do
right.
in the state of Montana. But we have a structural deficit here where it needs to be addressed. And rather than pull the rug out, both from the staff, the skilled staff at the city, and also diminishing services abruptly to our residents, we are making progress over each year, each cycle, each budget year. What I asked folks to do was only bring forward your highest priorities with the goal of only a 3.5% property tax increase, because I evaluated the inflationary level for our region at the time we set the budget mm-hmm. goals. So that meant that the department directors had a goal to work towards. Mm. That means that they had to have some trade-offs. They had to figure out, what do we want to do this year? What are the most critical priorities? And how is it that we can think differently about other resources we may have at our disposal?
Right.
An example, Public Works. And Public Works is a unique entity, because the road district is, it has more diverse revenues than other departments.
Mm-hmm.
Because, for example, the state of Montana has a gas tax. We receive some of those dollars through the state to be able to address infrastructure transportation needs. We largely have been saving those and adding them to large capital projects that we might get other grants for, or that we might finance for. We have had a need for additional street maintenance staff for years.
Mm-hmm.
We have more streets. The streets that we have are deteriorating. It's just a natural fact. We will get more bang for our buck if we can actually create staff capacity to go and maintain the streets we have than thinking about larger capital projects all the time that need more maintenance. So we took some of that gas tax money, and we're actually hiring two new street maintenance division workers to go out there, repair streets and repair the existing infrastructure we have, because that will be a better bang for the buck now and in the long term.
And it's one that the public always comments about, right?
Yes.
The first thing that they comment about.
Yes. Potholes.
Yes, yes.
You know, there are creative things you can do, not to take us off the topic, but I was just reading yesterday about the country of Norway. You think of it a big country, but it's like 5 million people, 4 million people.
Oh, wow. Well, that's it, huh? Wow.
Ireland's only 5 million and Scotland's only 5 million. These historic countries that you have all this historical legacy.
Yeah, very
interesting. They nationalized. They found oil.
Yeah, yeah.
And they nationalized it. They didn't let the private sector manage it.
Right.
And over the last decades, they've put a fund together of $1 trillion.
Unbelievable.
That they're using to underwrite health care for the residents, you know, repairs in the country, infrastructure,
right.
all that kind of stuff. And that reminded me a little bit. We sort of nationalized, but Missoulaized our water system.
Yes.
And there's probably profits being made from that and being, you know, applied to the budget in a way that's, you know, helpful.
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely. I mean, this is a situation where I am so thankful. I was before I served in elected office.
Right.
And I'm certainly thankful now. But as a Missoulian, I am so thankful for the leadership of former Mayor John Engen to have the courage to do this. Because Owning our water system, our municipal water system, literally will be the matter of, I mean, I will say life and death. I mean, we were talking about our water.
Right.
We were talking about a common. Yeah. And it's a situation where it shouldn't be commodified by an international conglomerate asset holding company.
Right.
And so the ability for the city to acquire it has enabled us to take what you call profits and drive them right back into the system. Mm-hmm. So rather than paying stockholders, we're now actually replacing more water lines. We have a low cost way for property owners, the service line for the water main.
Everyone, not just
everybody.
The select few.
We have been reducing leakage. We are able to keep our rates. We just had a rate increase, but the city of Missoula is solidly in the middle of the state. We aren't the highest, we aren't the lowest, and we have some of the best water in the area.
So that's exactly true.
Yeah, that's exactly one of the ways in which we can think about how do we use business acumen really for better service.
Well, that's one thing Mayor Angan really prided himself on, was kind of being a development-minded mayor, right? Mm-hmm. He was looking at business development. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, how are you shaping up with respect to that? I know the Triangle, we're working on that right now. So what other developments are going on in and around the city that you want to talk about?
Yeah. Well, because we were talking about the cost of living and then economic strength, we can do the best we can to encourage employment sector growth. And so this is a good example of both being a responsive government and being agile. When the Roseburg Lumber Products Company announced their closure, we shifted quickly to work with that company and landowner to figure out two things. One, how do we utilize those buildings? Is there actually a company that can get in there and utilize those buildings?
Nice.
And second, there's 230 acres there. Now, that company is very interested in being part of the community, right? It's been this little island actually up there for a long time.
Sure. Right.
But we were able to pivot quickly on two fronts. One, working with Missoula Economic Partnership, the job service and the Department of Labor, and making sure that those employees that lost their jobs with Roseburg had not only job placements and skill sets, but the ability to transition into other trade related or other equivalent jobs, mm-hmm. which they did. So that was exciting. Secondly, we, through our support and investment in Missoula Economic Partnership, we were able to secure a company that has purchased the buildings, Story House Incorporated, and they're actually creating a film studio in Missoula.
We're excited for that.
That is going to be very unique because there is the potential to hire up to 400 jobs over the course of time there. 400 jobs, mostly trade jobs. And we're talking about people building sets. We're talking about electricians. We're talking about carpenters.
Good paying jobs.
And there will be creative types too, of course. We have a lot of writers in our community. And there is land opportunity there, right? You look at a map, that acreage is right in the middle of our valley.
Right.
And there is of course, on the upper northern edge adjacent to I-90, but we have the chance to now create more infrastructure. We can bring in infrastructure as a municipality to see more housing opportunities, to see more commercial opportunities, to connect the trail system, to better connect the road system on the north side, which is hemmed in.
Right.
So there's a lot of things that we can do there. You mentioned the Riverfront Triangle. I can't tell you how excited I am to be the mayor that is going to see this darn thing get developed.
Exactly.
So many fits and starts on that.
Yeah, it's been a
toughie.
Here's one thing that I've been bringing to the city is we need and can be inspirational, but we have to have our feet on the ground at the same time to make sure we're making realistic decisions that can get done. It doesn't help any of us if this land sits vacant, because these lands are for redevelopment.
Right.
We're not holding them for municipal needs.
Right. We're very grandiose.
That's it. And while that is wonderful, they weren't able to be achieved.
Right.
So we have a really straightforward deal right now where we're selling the land to Averill Hospitality.
Right.
They're going to build a destination hotel, and we're going to expand infrastructure from the east side of Front across Orange Street to what is basically an infrastructure desert right now. Mm-hmm. And it is the reason that we're not seeing that private land be developed around the small parcel we own. We're bringing infrastructure. So we're bringing all the horizontal infrastructure you can imagine, all the subsurface infrastructure, water and sewer and utilities, fiber, all the things that are necessary,
and
burying the power lines
right
there. And then we're going to get, the public is going to get a fabulous riverfront promenade out of it. So we're going to have riverfront access. Right. Imagine what Karis Park looks and feels like. We can carry down that sense there. And then a terraced plaza that will go from the riverfront up to Front Street, because there's quite a change in grade.
Yep.
That will all be public. So the public will have a place by which to gather in that third space, create community. The Destination Hotel has agreed, the Averill Hospitality has brought a program they have in Whitefish to contribute 1% of their gross sales to our Affordable Housing Trust Fund.
That's nice.
So
that's
of the $4 million that we are selling the land value for, the plan is to contribute that to the trust fund. And the $3 million. So over the course of 10 years, $7 million into our trust fund, we've only been able to contribute $100,000 a year per the requirement of the ordinance because we have not been able to find any substantive way of getting some dollars in there. So I'm very proud of that.
Wow. Well,
that's good. And, you know, once you have a venue hotel, other things will sprout out around it. So it'll create more jobs than just the project itself is going to create.
Right. That's exactly it. And, you know, people have asked me, and so I'll just say, people say, really, we need another hotel? And the answer is yes.
Yeah, we do.
We need the right kind of amenities like this in places like downtown where there is a meeting space that'll be the equivalent of 500 or so people, but there'll be breakout rooms that will enable conferences and
other things.
That's what
we're missing in a lot of these facilities. So we can't go after small conferences and conventions and that sort of stuff because they all need breakout rooms.
They do.
Let's do a quick idea. Our guest is Mayor Andrea Davis. Mayor, how do you help sentiment, right, shape sentiment around something like that, that development? Because there are people that, you know, that opposed when we did the Merck, right? And there are people that oppose this. How do you help them see the future without offending what they believe to be like, I don't want Missoula to change because it's always been this way?
Yeah. Well, that's an excellent question because I can empathize with that feeling because, or maybe I should say sympathize, because there are moments where I know what they're talking about. I'm from Montana. I've lived in Missoula for 26 years. I get it.
Right.
And I'm also excited for the future because what we all know is that the only constant is change, and growth is going to happen regardless. We have an opportunity to shape it, and that's what our responsibility, charge, and opportunity is. And so by being able to shape the change and the growth, we can create the kind of community that does enable us to be a thriving, livable place. And something like the riverfront, where people say, oh, why isn't it affordable housing, for example? I will say two things. One, this is going back on the tax rolls. The important thing for the residents of the community means that it now will be a share of the overall tax base. That's important in order to address the ongoing property tax challenge that we have in this community and the state, which is how our property taxes are structured. So that's important. We need that value back on the tax rolls. It's actually really critical. Secondly, it will create a whole host of different jobs. And we'll be able to actually afford not only what we're talking about with this project, where there'll be public gathering spaces, where people will be able to access the river, enjoy one another. We'll be able to now have the dollars in that area, because it is an urban renewal district, to then have spur development on those other private parcels. People have been kind of waiting to see, honestly. A lot of tire kickers on those other private properties.
Right.
Wanting to know what's going to happen in the big hole.
Right, and because there's been lots of, you know, great expectations that haven't come to fruition.
And it has to be economically viable for us to be able to bring the infrastructure over and then have the economic model to understand how those taxes actually will come back to us in tenfold. The things that will come forward for us as a community is that there is an opportunity for us, possibly. I'm not going to guarantee it until we actually see this thing get built on the ground. But we have a vision for a pedestrian bridge that will further pedestrian connectivity in that area. Orange Street wasn't built for the ability to put the pedestrian bridge right underneath it like Madison has.
Right.
Unfortunately. However, once this area generates enough increment and enough tax savings, tax dollars, we can build a pedestrian bridge.
Over to the stadium.
Over to the stadium.
Resource,
which would be big.
It's big because we know that there's parking constraints over there. And so we'll open up. I mean, the flow of just community connection. You know, there's economic development, there's cultural opportunities, there's so many things that this will continue to create a great vibe.
That's really good.
I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
Let me flip to point three just a little bit more. The housing choice and affordability. There's a lot of building going on. There's a lot of housing construction, apartment construction along a number of the main areas, Mullen Road and others. Are we creating enough? And are, you know, the affordability issue, you don't have complete or even majority control over it, because all I hear from developers are how expensive construction costs per square foot are, you know, escalating.
Right.
So that's your, this is your wheelhouse. You spent 15 years, you know, running Homeward. And so what do you have to say about this whole, you know, conundrum?
Yeah, thanks for recognizing that we don't have a magic wand to all of a sudden change the market. And we are doing great work at the city. In fact, I hope people check out our Missoula 2045 on Engage Missoula, because there's a wealth of information, studies, and things that back up the decisions that we're making.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, City Council passed a very progressive land use plan in December. And that land use plan is modernized, not only to address the growth that we're seeing today, but the projections into the future. And so that's a state law mandate that we look 20 years out in front of us, and that we come back and actually reevaluate this every 5 years. And I think we'll do that more frequently since this is new. On top of that, we're undertaking a once-in-a-generation code reform process where we are creating a new zoning framework that will create the opportunities that you and I were just talking about. So more people want walkable neighborhoods.
Right.
So therefore, because more people want them right now and fewer exist, those neighborhoods are going up in price. I live in one. It was it's the Franklin DeFort neighborhood.
Right.
It was one of the more affordable places for a long, long time. However, it's being discovered, right? People are moving there. Why?
Right, right.
Because you can get almost anywhere. It's so valuable. Now, it's missing a lot of sidewalks, and that's another whole issue. What we're doing at the city is we are trying to trim down the time frame that's associated with getting a building permit, and the zoning framework in and of itself needs to be a lot more straightforward. It needs to be simplified, and it needs to be, we need consistency. So we are creating a unified development code that our staff can more consistently follow in order for the private sector to respond with more housing opportunities. We then can assume that more home types will be built in more parts of our community, allowing then for a much more diverse range of housing for a diverse group of people that we have to serve here.
Community, sure.
So that is ultimately the plan. In addition to that, I just talked about the $7 million contribution to the Affordable Housing Trust Fund. That is one tool the city will have to further incentivize. Let's just say we're going to create small studios that are affordable to seniors living on fixed incomes. That the market can't always solve for that, right?
Right.
But we can work with the market to figure out how do we create some kind of rent-targeted type of situation for seniors that really need it. That's one example.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we just invested, not from the Affordable Housing Trust Fund, but through our Missoula Redevelopment Agency, and the ability not only to invest in infrastructure, but also to invest in workforce housing. We're contributing to Opportunity Place, which is a private, for-profit, nonprofit, public-private partnership. Woo, that's a mouthful.
Public-private partnership.
Blah, blah, blah. And you know where Opportunity Resources was on Third? Okay.
Yes.
That's been deconstructed. When Missoula Redevelopment Agency puts its money in, we actually require deconstruction because that's one of our commitments to zero waste.
Right.
And so we really try to not throw away a bunch of good quality building materials, but try to reuse that.
Right.
And they're building 22 affordable apartments there for folks that are in the community, but many of their clientele that are living with developmental disabilities and such will be able to then live in these affordable apartments. There is going to be an art gallery. As you know, Opportunity Resources has a fabulous art program.
Oh, yeah.
There will be an art gallery right on Third displaying their works.
That's cool.
It is going to be an awesome opportunity. So we will continue to contribute to projects like that as we can. But ultimately, it's about creating more housing opportunities through the built environment, honestly.
Let me talk about the tough issue about housing. You know, you have a new urban camping ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have a problem like every other community, particularly one that's near an interstate.
Absolutely.
With the unhoused and homeless. How have things changed on that issue since you became mayor?
No, thank you for asking that, because in 2023, when I became mayor in November of 2023, I think it was actually at maybe the pinnacle of conflict, not only for our community, but many communities in the West.
Mm-hmm.
And there of course, is still an ideological battle out there around whether you should allow folks to occupy encampments in your community. And that's another whole story. It's a conversation. And if we have a whole lot of resources, we could talk about that. But we don't. And in the meantime, we need to manage the situation right in front of us. And so I helped the council go through a very public process of a working group to try to develop a workable ordinance that the city could have in place. Because not having an ordinance and not having a framework wasn't working for anybody, quite frankly.
Right.
Unhoused, housed, or commercial businesses. And so this ordinance has enabled us to manage the situation so the health and safety issues that we were seeing with large scale encampments has decreased. The ordinance was not passed to solve homelessness. It was meant to manage it. There are some really great things that have come out of it. One is the vehicle parking program.
Right.
We did not have any way of managing the fact that people were living in RVs and cars, and now we do. So we currently have around 90 RVs and cars that are permitted. That means that we know where folks are and we can help support them. So with this ordinance did have to come some staffing. But the additional staff members go around and basically help with basic needs. It's helping with propane and mechanical issues and garbage and those kinds of things. And honestly, the takeaway for us is that we thought, okay, we have a formal vehicle parking program. We need to have services that support people in terms of social services. But ultimately, having basic needs met has ended up really being the most basic and straightforward way people have been successful. Dare I say that folks are managing their very tight and challenging situation on their own. I'm not trying to say it's perfect. People are still living in challenging circumstances.
It's less of a visual eyesore seeing a lot of strewn garbage around there. It's not as much of that.
Right.
It's less dangerous.
Well, it's less dangerous, but my wife, who is a property owner who manages rentals, had issues in and around her property, and I think that's been cleaned up.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. That's, one of the ways that we've, over time, and of course, all good ideas come from somewhere else. And that's one of the things that I've been really committed to coming in as mayor. It's like you are a professional student is how I would think about it. You should be learning from others all the time, your own community members. And then what are other communities doing?
Didn't you go to the Harvard Mayoral Leadership Program?
Yeah, I did. And that was something I was able to also have our city engage in. So other leaders across City Hall have engaged in this.
And that gives you a chance to hear what's going on in other places.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Your peer group. Yeah. What would you say, you've been in the job for 18 months. What are the things that you didn't anticipate encountering that you've encountered? And how did you deal with it? Right. Give us one or
Tell
two.
Tell us about a couple of surprises or challenges.
Well, I would think, one of the things that I think I said this last time, it takes longer to get things done than I anticipated.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's
always does.
It does.
Always does.
It's not because people are sitting back. It's because the amount of items to work on is extraordinary.
Sure.
And there's unintended consequences of things that are happening around you that
exactly,
no one predicts.
Exactly.
Yeah. The world doesn't stand still.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, some of the other things that I couldn't anticipate what we're managing right now in terms of concerns and anxiety that people are feeling around just stability of society. That said, I feel like, in Missoula, we do have a lot going for us in the sense of a strong community. And I really hope that as Missoulians, we know that as we navigate the upcoming changes, both to create more housing choices for people, but also to make sure that folks have a decent chance here, that we are consistent, that we are tolerant, and that we have a view of abundance. Those things, if that's what we can think about, I think really will help us.
We're fortunate.
Yeah, we are.
We are fortunate to live in a community like this. We have to remember
because
that.
Because it takes a village, as someone used to say, to really take on these things and unanticipated changes, like federal policy has led to less tourism in Montana.
Yeah.
And not just in Missoula, and go up by the border.
Big time.
Right.
And that 30%. Has an economic impact on us that we have no control over.
Big time. I mean, tourism is roughly about 10%.
Do you communicate with the mayor in like Kalispell, like with local government and some of the surrounding, bigger towns?
I do. So we hold a quarterly Big Seven, that we call it, which are the seven largest communities in Montana. We hold a quarterly meeting. I will say that folks took the summer off, so we didn't meet on our last scheduled meeting in July.
Uh-huh.
And that, I feel like, is an opportunity all the time for us. In Montana, we see each other at the Montana League of Cities and Towns Conference or things like that. But we do hold quarterly meetings. And in fact, the mayors, I should say, there's a mayor and a deputy mayor of Bozeman.
Mm-hmm.
We chose to meet over Zoom every other month for a little while. As we were both going through a public process of putting structure around how folks were living outside and camping outside.
Sure.
So we were trading ideas and we were staying in touch. And, that is something that that I absolutely want to continue to foster. We're in an election cycle for municipal governments. So we may see some changes across the state. I really don't know. But ultimately, mm-hmm. It's very important. I mean, back to the issue of houselessness.
Yeah.
We have to be thinking regionally around this.
Yeah.
The state lacks any cohesive plan, unfortunately. I would love to help develop that with the state, but in the absence of it, we need to make sure that we continue to have regional coordination because it's not isolated to your own community, right?
Right.
And so it's really important that we not only share what we're doing and ideas and criticisms and things that we need to learn from, because this is one of the most iterative spaces that we can be
sure.
in. And, ideally we are taking what we're doing, like all of the learnings that are coming along with the housing sprint that has been set up alongside the Johnson Street phased closure.
Right.
We are learning a lot from that. And mm-hmm. the responsibility and the city's role is to take that to our partners and the community at large to say, how are we improving our entire homelessness response system
sure.
in the city of Missoula? And so I am feeling very optimistic because I feel like we are heading in the right direction when it comes to that. There are other challenges that I think a lot of people feel associated with maybe resources diminishing, especially from the federal level when it comes to this. And yet we have no choice but to continue to figure out how we
Absolutely.
Can put solutions forward.
Missoula is a company town in a weird way. We have 900 employees in the city and the mm-hmm. University of Montana has 3,000 right. employees. How has that relationship been?
With the university?
Yeah.
It's been great. We have a great relationship. In fact, gosh, but it was last year we held a little bit of a, I shouldn't say to call it a summit. It sounds too formal. Conversation with the Board of County Commissioners, the mayor's office, and then the president of the university. And then we held a bit of a gathering with all of our senior leaders. So folks at multiple levels of each could get to know one another. We've got a very good working relationship. We have multiple points of collaboration. I mean, mm-hmm. one example is, in our police department, we have a really well-developed program called the Crisis Intervention Team. And it's been something that basically helps our first responders not only understand how to deal with behavioral health challenges in the field and give our first responders the tools and capabilities they need, but also it addresses the system at the levels of identifying challenges that might not enable our community to respond. An example might be, how do we improve a form at the emergency department in order for somebody that is a mental health care provider to make a decision more quickly? That sounds so in the weeds.
Oh, it makes sense.
But those are the kinds of things that we're coordinating.
Sure, of course.
And our crisis intervention team not only is providing training for our law enforcement, but also sheriff's department, other counties around us, the Poverello Center, folks that are in the field,
right.
our code compliance staff, folks that are in the field that need the skill set and the training to have this trauma-informed approach. We are coordinating with the university's social work program, and they are coming out of that program and have an opportunity to hit the ground running with very real challenges and opportunities in the Missoula community. And it's been fantastic, actually, to have that collaboration with the university. That's just one example.
That's a good thing. We have 2 minutes before our break. Talk to us a little bit about the personal side to the mayor, Andrea Davis. Like, we talk a lot about the professional, but
let me add one thing to what you're going to say.
Okay, because I was going to say, you have a husband who's very understanding. You're so busy.
Right, and we're going to ask you what you do in your spare time. But I think importantly, I want to know how you feel about the fact that USA Today picked you as one of the women
that's
of
quite
2025. There's a lot of women in this country, 180 million, and you were picked one of the 50. How does that make you feel?
I mean, you can see me. I'm blushing a little bit. Right. I am incredibly honored. This is, and I'm humbled to be amongst these 50 powerhouses across the country that are making a difference in their community. So I feel incredibly honored. I'm humbled. It's something that is it's a wonderful achievement. It's really wonderful to be recognized for your work over the course of years, and I feel very fortunate in so many ways.
So how do you kick your heels up and say, do you ever say, hey, I need to chill? What do you do to relax?
Yeah, thanks for asking. So I don't know if this is relaxing or not, but my husband loves to mountain bike, and I like it, and I might say I love it. And so he decided that I needed to do a mountain bike race this summer. And so, because I was talking about the need to stay in shape, because that is one of the things, you know, mental health and physical health are always
and there's always breakfast and
challenge.
Lunches all the time.
Yeah. And so we rode in the Butte 100. Now, I did the Sereni 25, which was really 30 miles.
Wow.
But it was up on Homestake Pass, and
we
rode 30 miles, 4,500 feet elevation, and it was a real good time. And it was something that gave me a goal to work towards. So those are some of the things that we do. We get out in the woods, we mountain bike. I was really lucky to take a river trip this year. I haven't in the last 2 years because I've been focused on getting into office and then my first year as mayor. And this year I felt like, you know, the reality is I need to be able to take a break. I need to be able to step away from the everyday demands for a short amount of time. And I came back better for it. So those are some of the things that we do.
That's a good segue, by the way, and a good place to take a break. We'll be back with Mayor Andrea Davis after these words. All right, Arnie, we are back with Mayor Andrea Davis.
As the leader of our city, how do people get a hold of you? How do they engage with you? What is your social media access points? You know, tell our listeners.
Yeah, right on. You can easily find me in the mayor's office. So if you want to drop a note, if you want to request a meeting, it's easy to find us on the web. City of Missoula also has a social media, mostly Facebook, that they include some of the mayor's happenings, which is fun. My personal, I've got find me on Facebook, and Andrea Davis, find me on Facebook and Instagram. One thing I haven't found myself to have any time for is like a Substack writing. So stay tuned if I ever have the chance to do that. You know, that might be possible someday. Boy, I would love to be able to do that and connect with people in that way. So, you know, but finding me on Instagram and social, Facebook, I stay off X these days, for various reasons.
Yes.
Exactly.
Well, it's angry, but you know what though? AI allows for things to be done that, could be very helpful, by the way.
Right.
Absolutely. So that's an interesting conversation later.
The fact that you will be running for mayor again.
I am running now.
What's your number one goal for this coming year?
Ooh, that's a really good question. My number one goal is to have an effective zoning framework approved by City Council and in place before the end of the calendar year, so we can start getting some feedback from our development community on how it's working.
Fantastic.
Great place to leave it. We'll see you. Let's not wait. What did we wait? 14 months?
Yeah, let's not.
Okay, let's check in before the end of the year.
Okay, let's do that.
Does that sound like a
good
idea?
That sounds great. I'd love that.
All right.
Mayor, it's a pleasure as always.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
All right, thank you. Arnie, I'll see you next week.
Take care, Scott.
Thank you for listening to What Do You Know?
I can't wait for the next show, Scott.
I'm excited too, Arnie. If you'd like to suggest a guest, send me an email at scottrichman@townsquaremedia.com. We'll see you next week. And thanks for listening to News Talk KGVO.
Being a family caregiver can be rewarding, but it can also be expensive. Search caregiver compensation programs at the AARP Foundation Paid for Care Hub, developed with support from United Healthcare. Visit paidforcare.aarpfoundation.org.